The Will Cain Show podcast is presented by the Capital One Venture Card. Earn unlimited double miles on every purchase every day. What's in your wallet?
This is the Will Cain Podcast on ESPN Radio.
You've heard my point of view. You've heard it the last 2 days. You've heard it the last several weeks. And for those of you that have been around for a while, you've heard it for the last several years. You know how I feel about Drew Brees and the situation that unfolded over the last 48 hours. But I always want to bring in people who will tell me I'm wrong and why. Bring in people that disagree. People like you at 888-729-3776 on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. It's the Will Cain Show on ESPN Radio presented by Progressive Insurance. And one of those people now on my phone lines is NFL linebacker, also involved heavily with the NFL Players Association. It's Sam Acho on our phone lines. What's up, Sam?
What's up, Will? It's good to be back on, man. How are you doing?
I'm good. I'm glad to have you back on. Forgive me. I've forgotten your official title with the NFLPA, but I know you're heavily involved. You can answer what your title is as I ask you the question. What's going on at the NFLPA level right now when it comes to the league? I don't know that this kind of thing has already begun to be discussed, Sam, but I would love for your foresight. Do you think as we go into this season, we're going to see protesting to the national anthem become more of a prominent protest, or largely to the degree we saw when the NFL last went away?
Yeah, well, I think that the looking at the current state of America right now, if the season were to start today, you would see a huge spike in the number of players protesting. Obviously, with Drew Brees' comments, that kind of caught a lot of guys off guard, knowing him, a lot of people who know him and his character. But I applaud him for going back and apologizing. It takes a real man to apologize and admit that you were wrong, and that's what he did. But if the season were to start today, you would see a ton of guys protesting. And who knows, whenever the season starts, I think a lot of those demonstrations will depend on where we are in the state of America. How do we stand with this racial division that we see?
Yeah, I think you're right. If we were playing football today, you'd see massive protest in the NFL. I don't know what it will be like come September, October, or whenever the NFL season resumes. Sam, I'd love your feedback on something. You know, I think this is a hard conversation to have because we have to be able to almost do something very difficult for human beings, and that's to set emotions aside as best as we can and compartmentalize. It's really hard to do, but I actually think it's the only way we can do it. I think when it comes to underlying issues like the existence of police brutality, racism within law enforcement, I don't want to say have unanimous agreement, but we have a large percentage of this country that is ready to address, recognize, and talk about those issues. It doesn't mean every step of the way you're going to find unanimous agreement, but I think you'll find people that are ready to talk about it. I think when it comes to a situation like George Floyd, you found almost universal, unanimous agreement on the condemnation of what people saw in Minneapolis. But the divide, as always, comes when it comes back to that protest. And we saw that most recently in the conversations with Drew Brees. I just have a simple question for you, Sam. Why? Why do you think that's a place where everything falls apart?
Well, I just got to disagree. I don't think that's where it falls apart. I think it falls apart at the beginning almost of your argument, where you say you have to take emotions out of it. I think in certain situations with certain people and certain outcomes, you can look at specifically just facts, right? And obviously facts can be misleading. As you know, people can present certain facts and omit other facts. But when it comes to the trauma that America has experienced, watching homicide on your phone is what we're watching. That there's an emotional trauma that comes with that. There's an emotional just hurting and pain that comes from that. No, our bodies weren't meant to watch people die. We weren't meant to watch violence like that. That's not how we were created. And so there is an emotional piece that comes when you see an African-American man killed in front of with your own two eyes. So number one, then there's so that emotional piece has to be there. And it's heightened when you are an African-American, whether you're a man or a woman, because you're seeing this over and over and over again. And yes, after George Floyd's death was publicized everywhere for the world to see, you saw a lot of people say, yeah, let's do something. But there's a second emotional response that comes, at least for me and a lot of African-Americans, to say, why didn't you believe us when we pointed out Ahmaud Arbery? Why don't you believe us with Philando Castile? Why don't you believe us with Breonna Taylor? Why didn't you believe us with Tamir Rice? I mean, the list goes on and on. That's just in recent history. I didn't go back to people like Emmett Till and so on and so forth. Why didn't you believe? And so there is an emotional response that is much bigger than a protest, and certainly much bigger than a protest that happens during or not during the national anthem.
Yes, but I do not agree that in order to find solutions, emotion will have to be embraced. Emotion is something that may have to be embraced for some level of understanding of people of diversity to come together on. But ultimately, when you get down to it, to the process of finding solutions, I do think we are going to have to separate emotions from facts and emotions from solutions, Sam. It's not that you're incapable of being empathetic, and it's not that you haven't been empathetic, but the process of solution seeking will be free from emotion.
Well, without a doubt, and like I said, I didn't say you have to embrace emotions. You have to acknowledge emotions, right? The emotions have to be acknowledged. So number one, you got to educate yourself on what's been happening. You have to acknowledge emotions. Empathy is essentially the acknowledgement of an emotion. That's what it is. You can't just ignore the emotion. You can't just, if you want to come to a solution, you can't ignore. Look at facts. You look at the people who have been through these facts, and you say, okay, how do we come up with a solution that affects these people? Well, highly intelligent guy. You know how laws are made. You know, lobbyists go to congressmen in different places in D.C. They say, hey, look, and they go with people who are affected by things. They say, hey, diabetes, for example, look at my son. He has to stick himself with a pin every day, 5 times a day. Can you believe this? That's an emotional response. We need to do something about this, right? It's one thing to just say, well, hey, the facts say that 80% of Americans have prediabetes. Let's do something. Facts don't always move people. Emotions move people. And so we want people to be moved. And so with that, you have to acknowledge the emotions and also present the facts. The facts are that African-Americans are killed at a disproportionate rate according to their population. Those are facts. The facts are that African-Americans are also incarcerated at a disproportionate rate to their percentage of population. Those are also facts. And so when people look at me and say, well, you know, let's talk NFL coaching, for example. It was 3 African-American coaches and people out of 32. And people say, well, let's look at the percentage of Americans and African-Americans, and it's probably balanced. I look at, okay, well, use that same example for the prison system, right? You'll see it's not balanced. So then if you keep on going with that logic, you say, well, maybe black people are just bad people. Maybe they are thugs and thieves and all these things when, once again, those are not facts. I did an internship at Target about 10 years ago during college, a stores executive internship, and I got a chance to train with one of the guys who was the head of security. And the perception would be, well, African-Americans, black people steal. He said, dude, the most common thief at Target, this is nationwide, is a 35-year-old white woman.
I believe
right?
that.
Those are facts. But nobody's looking at those facts, right? So there's an emotional piece as well. So
okay,
these are just
okay,
examples.
Hold on. Yeah. Samuel Acho here on the Will Cain Show. I like this. So I think if you're cool, Sam, let's just go a little long here. Instead of keeping you for 2 segments, I'd love to just go long here if you're good to hang out for a
minute. Would love to.
Okay, let's say that the world leaders, the policymakers, whoever said, Sam Acho, Will Cain, we're going to get you in a room. I want you to address everything that's going on, okay? It would be incumbent upon me sitting in that room, just you and I agree, to emotionally acknowledge your reality. It would be incumbent upon me to not wave my hand at it or just do it mechanically as well. It would be right for me to understand that emotional component. I agree with you on that. And then as you and I, Sam, said, okay, what are we here to do? We'd have to lay out our goals, right? And our goals would be, let's reduce. What can we agree on? It's something we have to do, okay? And then we laid out our problems, okay? And we could role play it right now, Sam. We'd say, okay, I agree with you. That here's the things I can agree on right now. There, African Americans are incarcerated at a massively increased rate from the rest of society. And you know what else I think that is? Because largely, much of it is of low level crimes where it is, the main victim is the self, right? Drug related crimes, that kind of thing. And that is not proportionate. The punishment to the crime is not proportionate. That would be one. The police brutality, when it comes to African Americans, the data shows that low levels is disproportionate when it comes to other members of society. So we'd say, okay, if you agreed with me on that, Sam, we'd say, okay, let's find a solution. See, in all this is we're divorcing ourselves from emotion. We would have disagreement, or I don't know if we would, with one thing you said. all those instances, or most of those instances, you said Philando Castile, Ahmaud Arbery, George Floyd, travesties, absolute tragedies, injustices. You said African Americans are killed at a rate greater than the rest of society according to their population, right? And that's true as well. But that would also have to be, if we're going to solve a solution, we have to normalize that or adjust that for crime rates, because officers are going to be more prevalent in those areas. That doesn't boil down to what you said a minute ago, where somebody would say, well, you know, they're African Americans or thugs or whatever you said that. That's not the conclusion. But the conclusion is the data says X, and we have to ask why. And if we're going to come back, it's race that's causing it, and we have racism in the police department, we have to make sure we're taking all their factors into account. And I think you and I would go through these things together, and you're free to tell me where you disagree. And we'd work on a solution here, would we not?
We would, but and the crazy thing is I agree on every single point you just made, Will Cain. I agree with you. But
you do, really?
The danger – I do with every single point you just made, but the danger would be in stopping there, just saying, well, these are the facts. You got to look, because everything you said, well, right. Police brutality, right, as one example, African Americans getting killed by the police, right? That's at a higher rate. That's a fact.
Per population.
Imprisonment.
But I did say, Sam, and I thought you might disagree with me on that. That's not the end of that data, though. You have to adjust it for crime rates, violent crime rates.
Right, but see, before I would even get there, what I would say is, okay, the things that you named three or four different topics.
Right.
You said, well, yeah, you mentioned crime rate and petty crimes, and I get that. But there are systems that are put in place. What I would say, for example, these petty crimes. I'm sure you know about obviously the Jim Crow era, and obviously. About convict labor and
not just that 1990s minimum sentencing laws,
right? Exactly. So, but before then, like 1865, slavery abolished, everybody's free, go do your thing. Well, what happened then was that states made laws that essentially had things that African Americans did, petty crimes, as you mentioned, caused them to be max sentences. Right. So Louisiana, for example, even in the early 1900s, I've been to this place a couple of times, Louisiana State Penitentiary. They nicknamed it Angola. And this is an emotional side, but it's a fact as well. They nicknamed that place Angola because it used to be a plantation where slave owners would take Africans from the country of Angola and breed them on this ground. Right. Because they were known to be larger Africans. Right. So they nicknamed this place Angola. Right. Even in the late 1800s. It was still operating as a plantation, right? Well, it gets found out in Louisiana. The people find out about it. They say, hey, it's got to stop. So it turns into a prison, right? And so it turns to a prison, and now all of a sudden you see convict labor. You see, even now, today, inmates working, getting paid 20 cents, 10 cents, 5 cents an hour, right? Mm-hmm. So it's like, what? I wonder why these laws were put in place. Yes, there are laws, and yes, these are petty crimes that people are going to prison for, but I wonder why is it just affecting African-Americans? Are African-Americans bad people? Are they just disobeying the law? Or could it be that there is a system in place?
Well, see, but the point
slavery and mimic oppression.
So the point I'm getting at is twofold, Sam. One, I do think that real progress at some point has to be divorced from emotion, and that you can take two people who can acknowledge certain problems of agreement and move towards solutions. And two, I think you do have to move towards specifics. Like, you know, you started describing systemic racism. What I thought I was describing was elements of it, right? And so you have to dismantle it piece by piece. And there may be pieces that we disagree about whether or not they are truly elements of it or not. But as long as it's always emotional in this big, nebulous, huge thing like of systemic racism, I don't know that we'll ever move together towards something because we're communicating past each other. When I do think in the details with the specifics, there are actually goals that people who you would think don't agree on do.
Well, here's one specific. Let's take the NFL as an example. There was a study done between 1990. Well, so the first black coach in the NFL, I'm not even going to have you guess when it was. I'll just tell you. It was in 1921, second year that the NFL had even started. It wasn't even called the NFL at that time. A guy named Fritz Pollard, he was a coach. His team was 8-3-1. The year before, he was a player as well, and he won the first championship, led his team to a championship, 1921. right? He mm-hmm. coached until 1925. Obviously, people know about the 20s. The NFL was struggling, but also there was race relations weren't as great. And we can go into some facts on that if you'd like. Well, fast forward 64 years after 1925. It wasn't until 64 years till the next African-American man came and coached, a man named Art Shell, 1989, went to coach the Raiders.
Right.
Right? All of a sudden, from 1990 to 2002, the maximum number of African-American coaches you had was three. Right? All of a sudden, 2002, the Rooney Rule was implemented to help try and increase the number of coaches. Talking about one specific system in this topic, we'll talk about systemic racism or oppression or even call it implicit bias if you'd like. Right? Three coaches. Implement the Rooney Rule, the number of African-American coaches rises to seven in 2006. And two of those seven coaches, two out of the entire 32 are African-American. They go and coach in the Super Bowl. You would think the number would continue to rise, but it didn't. It didn't. Fast forward, the number continued to slowly go lower and lower and lower. The implicit biases of the NFL owners and some general managers and team presidents rose again. And now, in 2002, 17 years after the Rooney Rule was implemented, there are only three African-American coaches in the NFL. Right? So that is one example we can just take and break down and say, what are solutions? I suggest, not after talking to some African-American coaches, they say, hey, we need to be in the room with these owners. We need them to see us. They need to understand that though they have their bubbles of predominantly white men who they hang out with, they need to see that we are capable leaders. Let's get in the room. Let's do some kind of symposium with them. Let's also do some bias training for owners. Right,
increase
you can't have
networks.
The people who are messing up the rules. You can't have them make a new rule that they're the ones messing up. I had a teammate who said, "Hey, here's the deal, Sam. If owners want to change diversity in hiring, they need to hire new people. There's no system. You need to put hire new people. So they're the ones who need the training. And so that's just one quick example of one system right. We can break down. But you also go to justice and so on and so forth. And so I would agree with you in that you can take emotion out of it, but you do need to acknowledge the emotions that have been had and then take steps toward a solution.
Yeah, Sam, I always – this is our second time to do this, and of course I've been on with your brother a ton. But I guess I feel like we get caught in a loop of honestly either yelling racist or what's the opposite of a patriot? Traitor? I don't know. Not yeah. patriotic at each other, right? And I think that's what happened with Drew Brees. I'm being real with you. I think that happened. I think we're caught in this loop of unproductive crucifying of each other.
But
okay.
I couldn't disagree
and that's,
more because remember he apologized.
Sam, that's why I want
he
to take
apologized.
Emotion out of it. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, but Will Drew like I'm with you and I'm with you until a certain point, right? Because Drew went back and apologized, and many guys. I was doing an event with one of his teammates in Chicago, and my friend came to this event late because Drew had a call with his entire team, not only apologizing but explaining where it came from. He came back and went on social media and said, "Hey guys, I apologize. It didn't.
Of course,
that's
he did,
not
though,
what
Sam.
I meant."
Of course,
but
he did,
but many guys wouldn't. Many guys haven't. Put it that
that's
way.
That's not no, Sam. I wouldn't, but everybody else would, because you get drugged like that. You're going to. He got drugged by everybody, Sam, in the league, in media, by everyone. And I think it was wrong.
Now people are praising him for apologizing. People are saying, "Hey,
are
everybody
they?
Can be wrong." I think that's. I know. I have.
Think.
I know that Michael
was
Thomas,
it on the first or the
Michael
second
Thomas
apology.
Had. Say it again.
Was it on the first or the second apology?
It was. He apologized this morning, and people have been saying, "Give the man a second chance." Even before this morning, when he went back and made another comment, they said, "Hey, give the man a second chance." Everyone's entitled to their opinion. So I don't think we're going in a circle. I think people, like you said, we're entitled to our opinions. But once again, I think that's the whole piece of let's put our emotions aside and let's move toward the solution. I think Drew, per your example, maybe he had an emotional response. My grandfathers were patriots. That's what I feel. But he came back and said, "You know what? Let me take my emotions out." So I think we're all moving in.
Yeah.
In
by the way,
direction.
I meant that. I meant that both ways on the emotion. I did mean that both ways. Like
yeah.
for everybody, like myself, that might have different emotions wrapped up in the flag. Let's set that aside for a moment, as best we can, to work towards solutions. And that's the thing, Sam. We're going to have our disagreements. You and I are. We have in the nature of this call, right? But I just
yeah.
like, was anything really solved by what happened to Drew? Was anything made better? I don't think so.
Well,
and so my point in
yeah.
the end, Sam,
yeah.
just to say this really, my point in the end, in if there's a theme or where I'm trying to bring this back around to, is if we can stop yelling at each other and stop dragging each other and stop and try to take the emotion out, I do think if you and I got in a room, we could agree on a lot of things that there could be solutions found for. I do think that's what's going to be required. But I get skeptical of, you know, are we trying? Are we trying, actually?
Well, I know a majority of that, if not all of the African-American community is trying. We are trying. And so, but it takes two to tango.
And a lot of guys have. I want to be fair about that. I mean, like Malcolm Jenkins, and I'm sure you've been a part of a lot of those guys have really sought real reforms, and I understand that as well. So
yeah,
I know that.
Yeah.
I know that. All right, Sam, this is probably a wandering conversation. Probably wasn't the most direct, but I've appreciated all the conversations I've had with you.
No, I appreciate you as well. And like I said, I think that we're all moving in the right direction. It's not, almost to your point, it's not a white versus black fight. It's an everybody versus racism fight, everybody versus hatred, everybody versus bias. That's what the fight is and should be. And so I agree with you, Will. The more we get on the same page, the more we acknowledge, if you want to agree with me on there, to acknowledge emotion, right, to empathize and then move towards solution, I think that's when we'll see real solutions. A lot of my friends are asking me, what can I do? What can I do? It's almost like if George Floyd was your brother or your son or your friend, it's not even – you wouldn't ask what could I do. You would say what – like you wouldn't ask what I do. You say what wouldn't I do to help solve this? You would do everything. And so to people listening, it's like, man, think about solutions to help solve it. Because bias does exist, implicit bias does exist, racism does exist, systemic oppression does exist, and maybe we should, like you said, take them piece by piece
definitely.
And start seeing a change.
Hey, Sam, real quick, are you older or younger than Manuel? I always forget that.
I'm older.
Yeah, okay. All right. Samuel Acho, NFL linebacker here on The Will Cain Show. I've enjoyed it, Sam. Thank you.
Awesome. Thank you.
He's the NFLPA executive committee member as well. I'll open it up to you, 888-729-3776, plus we draft our weekend homework, school movies, coming up on The Will Cain Show.
Capital One knows life doesn't alert you about your credit card. That's why we created Eno, the Capital One assistant that looks out for surprise credit card charges, like over-tipping, duplicate charges, or potential fraud, then sends an alert to your phone and helps if you need to fix them. Another way Capital One is watching out for your money when you're not. Capital One, what's in your wallet? See CapitalOne.com for details.
It's your home speaking, and I need you to do me a couple of favors. First, could you get that blueberry that rolled under the fridge last week? It's throwing my feng shui off. Second thing, bundle your home and car insurance with GEICO. It's easy, and we could save money. Lastly, I know you were thinking of painting the nursery back to off-white, but I'm actually feeling this baby blue. Didn't think it was my color, but I am pulling it off.
GEICO. For bundling made easy, go to geico.com today.
School movies are our homework. Movies that take place in or around a school environment but do not include athletic movies. Earlier in the show, we did our brainstorming session. This is going to be a lot of movies, but I'm going to give you a heads up about where we are so far. Movies on the big board. Old School, Back to School, School of Rock, Breakfast Club, Sin of a Woman, Animal House, Fast Times, American Pie, Dead Poets Society, Good Will Hunting, Dangerous Minds, Lean on Me, Billy Madison, Dazed and Confused, Superbad, and Ferris Bueller. Fellas, Bubba, Nuno, Mike, Pat, this is what I think we have missed. And I think it's fair. I know you guys like to hide a few movies in your back pocket, but I think it's only fair to put them up on the big board. PCU, big one from the 90s. Revenge of the Nerds, Mean Girls, Can't Hardly Wait. That's what I have on the big board.
Kindergarten Cop and School Ties.
Nuno, you brought up Higher Learning too earlier. Why didn't you put that on the big board?
Yep. We missed 22 Jump Street.
Yes.
Oh, yes, we did.
Yes.
This is a bad category to have the first pick.
Because it's a lot of movies to pick from.
We should have narrowed it down to high school.
Hey, before we draft, I don't know if I should ask this before or after we draft. I think this category, the underlying question is how does it hold up? Like, that's the whole thing. How do these hold up? The draft order is
me.
You'll get this wrong.
Yeah, you'll get this wrong.
The draft order is wrong until someone corrects.
Odds of me getting this right or low. Nuno with the first pick, me with the second pick, Mike A with the third, Bubba with the fourth, and Pat with the fifth.
Because of punishment, I think we need to make sure we clarify.
Hey, God forbid you take a couple days off around here.
It's Pat, because it was so hard not to watch movies.
Pat got punished, so he got last pick.
I was on vacation.
All right, I'm gonna bring up my point after we draft. All right, because I don't want to help anybody out. So, Nuno, you have first pick. Where are you going?
This is difficult because I have a lot of movies that I'm thinking about.
Yeah, it's a great category,
Not difficult.
It actually is because, like, I could do, like, you could go Animal House, but I'm not sure how it holds up. Like, you could go Old School.
Yeah, great. We're running out of time in the segment, so if you could pick a movie.
I could go Social Network.
Hey, Nuno, before you pick, remember what that listener said. 4 out of 5 of us have broken the rules. You're supposed to pick your favorite, not what you think's going to win. That listener said only Pat, no matter his bad
choice. That listener was full of it.
Yeah, that was ridiculous.
Well, if I'm going to pick my favorite, I will go Old School.
Okay.
Like, what? It seems like you just got talked into that. I mean, what just happened?
He's questioning my integrity. Why don't you relax there?
I think we all have to do a better job.
All along.
I think we all have to do a better job.
No, I mean, because I just...
Nuno, it would have been my number one pick.
Oh, God. I know I lost.
It was my number one as well.
Yeah.
All right, here's mine. It's easier. It actually is easier when you just say, which is my favorite one. My favorite one, I think, left is I'm going to pick number 2 overall, Dazed and Confused.
Okay.
I love it.
It's a good one. All right.
I'm going to pick my favorite, even though you guys are all going to go, it's not your favorite. You're just trying to win. No, I'm not. This is my favorite, Good Will Hunting.
It's good.
Someone always has to ruin it. Trying to enjoy the weekend. Trying to have some fun watching a movie. Let's watch Good Will Hunting.
We have to watch that hug where it's like, it's okay. It's not your fault. And everybody cries. And
I want
and
to
plus,
do that to you, Nuno. Nuno, I want to give you a
mini
hug.
Driver,
you. It's not
Mike.
Your fault.
It's never
Mike,
my fault.
I want to ask you a question. How much better, and I'm not trying to be mean. How much better would Good Will Hunting have been with a different actress as the lead romance?
Much.
Yes, much. And I like Minnie Driver fine, but it just didn't work. It didn't seem
right. I said the same thing about Dark Knight. I think it would have been 10 times better with somebody.
I agree.
I think both Gyllenhaals are so off-putting.
Yeah, I agree with you about both of those. Okay, fourth pick, Bubba.
Maybe it should have been Marissa Tomei.
Thanks.
Okay. All right. So, what we got here?
We got to get to break soon.
Old School was my number one. So, in all fairness, that would have been my favorite, but that is off the board. If I'm looking at my board here, I got Superbad at number 3, and I got Dazed and Confused at number 4. That's already taken. But if we're going with favorites, Old School is a movie I quote all the time. Another quotable movie, another great one. The number 2 on my board is Animal House, and I'm going with the classic.
Ooh,
wow. Ooh, I'm excited. I finally have to watch it.
I wanted that one, but that's okay.
I think there's a sleeper pick, 2 sleeper picks in my mind, really on here. Go ahead, Pat.
Okay, well, I can't wait to lose, but I don't care. I'm just going to go with my second favorite comedy movie of all time.
I hate everything about this.
It's not going to be bad. It's not going to be bad. You know, you guys are all potted down. Everyone's potted down. It's my time to shine. I'm going with School of Rock.
Oh, God.
You're such a child.
It's so good. It's so funny.
We were better off if we were legally
blind. This is the thing. I think PCU would have been I think it would have held up.
Never seen it.
I think PCU... Lean on Me, Scent of a Woman. But
School of Rock holds up so well. It is so funny.
School Ties.
Never seen it.
Who's in School Ties? I can't remember.
Brendan Fraser, Matt Damon, Ben Affleck. I mean, everybody's in it when they're like,
oh, yeah, great.
18.
Let's watch another Matt Damon, Ben Affleck movie. Great.
I don't think I can distinguish that one from Dead Poets. School Ties.
Cowards!
Dead Poets is boring.
Okay, here was the thing. Here was the calculation before we go to commercial break. I was saying this is going to be a big one on what holds up because Old School is the 90s. Dazed and Confused is the 90s. What's the best most recent one? Like if somebody was going to try to win this thing and pick a recent school movie, what would it have been?
I think Superbad might be the most recent one.
And that's not that new either. What is that, a decade or more old?
Yeah, probably.
15 years?
Yeah. Old School was
2003.
Oh, so maybe that around the same year then.
School of Rock's looking pretty good all of a sudden.
No, it's not.
This weekend preview is brought to you by Geico. Learn more at Geico's 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies at geico.com/giveback. There you have it. Weekend homework. School movies. It is Old School. It's nominated by Nuno. School of Rock by Pat. Animal House by Bubba. Goodwill Hunting by Mike A. And Dazed and Confused by Will. There is your weekend homework. Your calls. Open forum next. 888-729-3776. The Will Cain Show.
It could be a routine drive to pick up the kids after school or an epic road trip across the country. No matter where your travels take you, we know those miles count. We're Marathon. We have over 5,700 stations across our great nation. Our people are working hard every day to provide you with quality top-tier gasoline to improve engine performance and fuel your life. Marathon, fueling the American spirit.
It's the Will Cain Show on ESPN Radio. And if you missed any of our long-form interviews, go check them out. On demand in the Will Cain Podcast, brought to you by the Capital One Saver Card. Earn 4% cash back on dining and entertainment, 2% at grocery stores, and 1% on all their purchases. What's in your wallet? On those podcasts, you can find long conversations with guys like Damian Woody, or you can go back and listen to the shows from this week, all of which are evergreen and address the issues going on in America right now. I think you'll find conversations here on the Will Cain Show and on our podcast you will not find in any other places. Open forum for you to disagree with me, like Eric from Tennessee, who's on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. What's up, Eric?
Yeah, good afternoon, Will Cain. Listen, I just wanted to say it's not really a disagreement, but the statistics that you presented as far as police violence, I think they're a little skewed simply because those are all self-reported or they're from third parties that do their own little investigations because, as you know, there's no requirement by the DOJ to present that. Further, if the videotapes have shown us anything and camera videos and all of that, well, camera phones, that sometimes police officers lie on their reports, right? Like they would say something happened and then a camera phone or something would say different. I would say maybe a couple of years from now, you're going to have more accurate reports due to things like, the body cams. But what's also going to end up happening is rural areas that don't have access to that type of technology and that don't have citizens that are going to record the police, they're probably going to have an uptick in violence because if you get fired from a police department in a major city, where are you going to go? You're not going to get a new job. You're going to go to that rural area in your state and just take that job there, and they're not going to report you. I think that's why I think the police brutality thing has to be addressed in a different way because if not, brutal police officers are going to get fired from their job and just go to another job. And that's something that has to be prevented.
All right, several interesting things. You can stay on the phone lines here, Eric. On the numbers, I'm not going to dismiss you outright and say, like, hey, we've got to accept certain facts here. You're right that numbers can be manipulated, and I agree we need to look at everything with skepticism. Elon Musk was just on the Joe Rogan podcast, and he made this joke, and I don't care if this joke makes you mad. It's not even an endorsement to repeat it. It's just illustrative. He said right now, you know, Elon Musk is very skeptical of the coronavirus numbers. He said right now, if you get killed by a shark and your arm washes ashore and they test your arm for coronavirus, they say you died of coronavirus. Numbers can be moved. And you're right, Eric, they can be on a lot of things when it comes to police reporting. These numbers that we have, and it sounds like you know what you're talking about as well, the best we have is there's no DOJ requirement for police offices, police departments to report their numbers, but the FBI does attempt to track a lot of these numbers. So what they do, the best I've found numbers come through a combination of the FBI and the Washington Post, who's tracked a lot of them. But you have to also go through, by the way, on police killings, it's a little more black and white. I don't mean race, obviously. I mean black and white, and you can see what the numbers say. On police brutality at lower levels, it's much more difficult. But I think we do have to arrive at a place where we can agree on some facts and some numbers, even if we acknowledge they're not perfect. They're not absolutely spot on. The last point you made, Eric, about bad officers being pushed around and perhaps ending up in rural markets. You said rural because you're assuming they're going to have less technology. By the way, I'm not 100% sure that will be an accurate assumption. I mean, police department budgets have gone up. Grants from the federal government have gone through the roof. Every police department you look at, by the way, they have a ton of, it's not unfair to say militarized technology, but I grant you their scale. But I think the real underlying point is it's hard to get rid of bad officers, just like it's hard to get rid of everything. Bad teachers, And like, that's why we love sports. Everybody listening to this show is because it's a meritocracy, right? If you're not good enough, you're not staying on the job. It's best man wins. But there's a lot of things and a lot of reasons why bad people stay on the job, whether or not it's police departments or anything else. One of them being they have a ton of union protections. But you're absolutely right. I was having a conversation with some guys the other day. They were talking about even applying to park rangers, like bad park rangers get passed around from park to park because they can't just be dismissed. And it will be an issue of bad officers being pushed around until they end up at bad markets that have bad hiring practices, Eric. And maybe that's rural.
But also things is that
you are.
What happens a lot is a lot of people view criminals a certain way, so they can always, almost always justify being brutal to someone. Like, hey, you have all these complaints where all those people were guilty anyway. And there are people that would be willing to accept that. And that's another thing is that I'm not saying I blame TV per se, but if you think about how we romanticize the police job itself, it's always the police officer is always in the right, and the criminal is always the criminal, and people that investigate police officers are always the bad ones. You know, we reward the guy that plays by his own rules. And I know sometimes that seeps into it because it's almost as if when something bad happens to a criminal or when something bad happens to someone, they always look, what was he doing when it happened? And it's almost like you have to prove that the police officer did something wrong rather than the other way around. Like,
we don't have complete disagreement on everything you said here today, Eric. We've disagreed a lot in the past and on this. But I do think that when we're talking about law enforcement, largely the vast majority are good, not just officers, but good people. David from Southern California, you're on the Will Cain Show.
Hey, Will, thanks for letting me on. I was on a few months ago. I just have a quick preamble. People's emotions have changed very quickly around the Black Lives Matter movement. Like 2 years ago when you said Black Lives Matter, you'd almost get a reflexive All Lives Matter. People have been educated. I want to know what you think the NFL will do this year if people start kneeling. A couple of years ago, it was a shocking act that offended a lot of people. But just like people got used to gay marriage really quick, people finally understand the Black Lives Matter movement. I live in Southern California. There was a protest with all white people holding Black Lives Matter signs, something I thought I would never see.
Okay, two things, David. I hear your question. I hear your preamble. You know, the problem... Part of the problem that is there's a platform as well that accompanies Black Lives Matter. Do we buy every single thing on the platform? That's sort of a big question when you're asking, are people jumping on board? Do they understand every aspect of the platform? Does it include? I don't want to talk about what includes or not right now because I want to be 100% informed. Do I think that people will have a different reaction to kneeling during the national anthem? I don't, David. I think it'll be ugly again.
Thank you for listening to the Will Cain Podcast. You can listen to The Will Cain Show live weekdays at 3 Eastern on ESPN Radio and on the ESPN app. The Will Cain Podcast.